Road and get on Mesa Street.
Blog get home a lot quicker. Radio.
My brothers and my sisters, and welcome to the PRF table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we are excited that you are with us here at the first Thursday of the month in February 2017. This is our Black Money Matters series, as we do every single year in the month of February. We just want to honor Black history, and we're not just focusing on what has happened back in the 1960s, what's happened back during the times of slavery, but we're making Black history every single day of our lives. And so tonight we are just so excited to have with us what I'm going to say is the highly sought after Dr. Harold Arnold. he is a marriage ministry facilitator and author of several books, but the one that is just blessed my spirit and my heart and my marriage so much is called The Unfair Advantage, A Grace-Inspired Path to Winning at Marriage. So we're definitely going to touch on that book in a little bit. But we're going to be talking about your future. We're going to talk about the future tonight, and we're really going to bring into a different perspective than we've had on the PRF table before, Dr. Arnold, bringing in marriages and finances. And so without further ado, we just want to give you the floor just to say hello to our listening audience here on Blog Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we present to you Dr. Harold Arnold.
Well, greetings, Dr. Dunlap. Thank you so much for that warm and gracious introduction. It's indeed a pleasure to be with the PRF crew, and I'm so thankful for their relationship that we formed. And I believe in divine intersections, and I certainly believe that this is one of them. And I think this intersection of marriage and money, speaking of intersections, is also one that is of vital importance. And so I'm glad to be able to contribute to the conversation. And, I like that you talked about the future, because, it's so critical that we have the mindset for when we talk about the future. Otherwise, we are just going to repeat whatever it is that we've been doing, and so we have to help work and shape our mindset to be prepared for what God has for us to accomplish. So thank you for inviting me to be part of this conversation. I'm grateful.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So listening, if you are just joining us for the first time, this is how we do at the PRF table. If you're listening and you want to join into the conversation, you have a question for Dr. Arnold or myself or any of the other crew as they take their respective seats here at the PRF table, just press 1 on your dial pad. We'll see you light up on the switchboard and bring you into the conversation. If you are listening online and you'd like to chat with us on Facebook, just send a message and somebody will be monitoring that, and we would love to read your question or your comment on the air. So here's where I want us to start tonight. As I said, your future, my future, all of our future depends on how we understand, how we connect, how we educate, and how we transform the landscape of faith, finances, and family in this season. And as I said before, we're doing something a little bit different because we always focus on family as we deal with Black History Month, particular Black Money Matters series. But I really felt it in my heart not just to have that general conversation, but I don't know about you, Dr. Arnold. I have been seeing, and you've probably seen it a lot more than I have in respect to what you do in ministry and how you serve. But I have, over the last 4 or 5 months, have been noticing an attack on families.
Mm-hmm.
And not just an attack on families, an attack specifically on marriages. And something that you said was going back to reshaping or reframing a mindset. The conflict has been from the beginning with creation.
Mm-hmm.
God created man. Matter of fact, we go back to Genesis 1:27. God created mankind in his image, and in the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them right after the likeness. But then it wasn't until the enemy decided that I'm not satisfied with this perfect union that God has created. So I'm going to cause a little conflict. And he did so. And I think marriages have been suffering ever since that time. Perfect, perfectly honest with you. It's been, marriage has been suffering, and it's been challenging. And one of the things that I just truly believe in is we have to do a better job within the church. Those of us who have the opportunity to stand behind the pulpit, we have to do a better job at focusing on this area, not necessarily as the one talking about it, but at least inviting it in so that we're dealing with this, because these two areas, marriage and finances, if there's not any other area that I can see for the family, especially the black family, if we don't deal with these two things, where is the black family going to be 5 years from now?
Right.
A year from now. So that's where my heart is. God really impressed it upon me. We have another gentleman that's going to be coming on next week. And so we're dealing with marriage and finances for 2 weeks here on the PRF table because it's that important. And so I wanted, for those of us who, those who are just joining, we're listening and you're joining us with Dr. Harold Arnold, social and organizational psychologist, the author of The Unfair Advantage, A Grace-Inspired Path to Winning at Marriage. And we're talking about the future, marriage and finances. And so, Dr. Arnold, if there is just one place that, that you wanted to start with this conversation, where would it be? You know, there's a lot of people who are struggling in marriages. I saw a post that you mentioned earlier about the male factor when it comes to marriages and having these conversations. Sometimes people just don't know where to start. And so I really believe that when people don't know where they start, where, whether we're talking about marriages and having challenges there, or whether we're talking about finances and having challenges there, sometimes people don't do anything. So how can, you know, what is it that you can put out to us and say, you know, let's just try this?
Sure. Well, no, it's a great question. And it's not, and I don't think the answers to that question is that, that is mutually exclusive. I think it's a very, I think the answer is one that attends to both the financial question and the marriage question. Those are interrelated. I think the starting point is exactly where you identified. The starting point is in Genesis, because in order to understand and develop a solution, you first have to understand the true nature of the problem. And the true nature of the problem, certainly from the Christocentric worldview, is sinfulness. And the God did not create man, the husband and wife, at a conflictual state. That state was introduced through self-centeredness. And that, you know, what happened, we clearly see in Scripture, it's so plain, I mean, it's hidden in plain sight, that a division happened after sin happened. And, you know, the God says, you know, this is woman, you know, wife, from now on, this is going to be your challenge, you know. And he said, husband, this is going to be your challenge. This is what you're going to be focused on. And wife, this is what you're going to be focused on. And that created a schism. And forever, the that schism is what we wrestle with today. The things that matter to the husband, the things that are priorities and matter to the wife. And my wife and I, we've been married this year in July, will be 29 years. And I would love to say that we have everything figured out. I would love to say that we have nearly everything figured out. The problem is neither one of those things would be true if I said that. And why? Because there's that schism. And it's, again, it's the schism that start that we saw in Genesis. And the same adversary that was there and present in the creating that schism in Genesis is the same adversary that is here in my house all the time trying to create, you know, and trying, you know, that we always have to be binding and we have to be praying against and all of these things. He is still, he is our adversary. That's what St. Peter calls him. And so I think that's an important starting point, and it's one of the reasons that I use that subtitle of A Grace-Inspired Path to Winning at Marriage. What is the nature of our relationship with God the Father? It's one that can only be navigated through grace. What is the nature of our relationship with our spouse? It is one that can only be navigated through grace, and it requires us, you know, to give up of ourselves, and that's tough sometimes because we like the way we think. You know, I like think the way I think feels right to me. The way my wife looks at some of these situations does not feel as right to me. And so being able to get to that point where we believe and understand that grace factor is critical for our spirituality and for getting on the same page with our spouses as well. And part of that is key to that whole financial piece, because if we can't get on the same page about anything else, guess what? We're not going to be on the same page as far as finances are concerned either, especially finances. Well, so that to me is key, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm reminded of in the fifth chapter of Acts, some of you may have heard this or read this before, the story of Ananias and Sapphira. And for those who don't know the story, the man comes in, the husband comes in, and he lies to God. He lies to Peter, but he's really lying to the Holy Spirit about something that he said he did regarding finances, something that was inside of his control that he didn't have to do. But when the question was brought before him, he lied about it. And then we see, as we keep on going on, this man actually dropped dead as he told his lie before the Spirit. And then the people around him had to carry him out. And then after that, it says that the wife comes in. And she had the same opportunity, and she said the same lie, and she dropped dead. And when I read stories like this in the Bible, it lets me know that the enemy is constantly attacking marriages. We don't really look at that as something that really deals with the marriage, because the way that I've always heard it taught or preached has always been about just lying to God, lying to the Holy Spirit. But when I looked at it in preparation for today, I said, you know, if they were on the same sheet of music, Doc, not the same sheet of music to tell the same lie, but the same sheet of music to be honest before God, we would be reading a whole different text. And so,
well, it's interesting that you say that, right? Because you made that correction there, because they were on the same page, and it makes an important point, right? It's not good enough to be on the same page marching in the wrong direction, right? I told some couples last weekend, you know, we talk about this thing of unequally yoked. We hear it in the church. I've grown up in the church, Dr. Dunlap. You know, I'm a PK, father's a pastor since I was 2 years old. So, you know, I'm bilingual. I speak Christianese. And we talk about this thing all the time about unequally yoked. Like that's the albatross. That's the big problem. And I was telling these couples, we got a problem with being equally yoked too. See, when we're equally yoked going in the wrong direction, that's a big problem as well. At least unequally yoked, if the way we've been, you got one person that's trying to go in the right direction. And so I think that's an important point that you're making with the Ananias and Sapphira story, that they were colluding to be in deceit. You know, they were allowing the enemy to blind them to, you know, what it is that they knew. These are not unbelievers, right? These are people that at least at some level had association with the people of faith, right? So these aren't people that we would believe had some animosity or rejection of God or anything like that. So, and to me, that is a great example that so many people, Christians, people who are people of faith, can be deceived, and that they can collude, they can conspire together and allow the enemy to deceive us, even people of faith. And that's why in the book with the unfair advantage, I really make this point that, or certainly seek to, that our faith, your faith is not enough. And, you know, sometimes, a lot of times when I say that, you know, the believers, you know, they start to look at me like I'm heretical. And, you know, I'm saying, well, why in the world does Peter in this passage, you know, talk about all these other elements, you know, that add to your faith virtue knowledge. And I can go on and on. Maybe we'll talk some about that during the course of this discussion. But the main point I want to make right now is that we have to not just say we're Christians. We have to not just show up in church on Sundays. You know, there is a depth that God is looking for in our person, you know, and with that, there's a depth that God is looking for in our marriage, and that depth, he's looking for that to be inextricably tied in to who he is, and because it's inextricably tied into who he is, we know without a doubt whose we are, and so we don't just wear our Christianity on our sleeve. You know, it's something that's in our core being. And so do we slip up? Yeah, we still make mistakes. We still slip up. But
right.
His grace covers us. That's our, you know, that is our advantage. And it's an advantage that we did not earn. It's an advantage that Christ paid for us more than 2,000 years ago and through an unfair death. And so the message that I want to give couples is you don't have to be perfect, you know, as a Christian. You don't have to act like you're perfect. You don't have to put up a facade. You don't have to pretend, you know. We just have to remember our roots. You know, what are we rooted in? And we have to, you know, we have to strive to stay aligned with that root. Does that make sense, Dr. Dunlap?
It makes so much perfect sense that one of the ways that we really deal with things with PRF is dealing with the root cause indicators of what's going on. And, mm-hmm. and it's amazing because we try to teach people in our workshops and through webinars and even here on the PRF table, or whether I'm preaching or somebody else is preaching, we try to really teach people and show people that, look, you don't have to be perfect. None of us who stand before you, whether we're facilitators or radio hosts, we're standing before you as perfect individuals who don't have our own challenges. But when we're honest about things, then that opens mm-hmm. up and it creates a whole different space. Part of the definition to conflict transformation as it relates to PRF is to seek, what we do is to seek and create safe environments by identifying, naming, and understanding the root causes of conflict. So if we can, first of all, start naming them, if we can identify them, what happens is in, when you get around other people who are like-minded, and I think that's something key, and maybe you can touch on that. Sometimes people who are going through marital problems, sometimes people who are going through financial problems are trying to get answers and solutions from folks that's going through the same thing as them, but are not mm-hmm. headed in the same direction. Some mm-hmm. folks are just comfortable with their marriage being the way it is. Some folks are
right.
just comfortable with their finances being the way it is. And if those are the people who you are connecting with, then it's a recipe for success. W.P. Strauss, he wrote something called The Ethos of Personal Financial Management of Church Members. And he said the church, the Christian way of life and personal money management, and I could say the Christian way of life, and we can incorporate marriages in there. We can incorporate finances in there. We can incorporate family in there. But he says it intersects at places, at numerous places, since the truth of Christian faith penetrate all aspects of economic life. So if we don't really try to get at what are some of the root causes of some of these challenges that we're having
mm-hmm.
and put ourselves in a position, we have to position ourselves, in my opinion, position ourselves with individuals that have a heart for this. And
mm-hmm.
I can be honest with you, that's one of the main reasons why I said I have to get individuals who are, and I'm going to say it, who are experts in their space. We have to get individuals who live, breathe, and walk this thing out in each one of these areas that we're going to be covering this month, just like I live, eat, and breathe PRF every day of my life. You know, my wife gets tired of it sometimes because I see PRF in everything that's going on. I watch something on the news. I see a PRF-related situation. And that's because of what I see people struggling in the area of finances in particularly. So,
no, it's huge. You missed that point of that's about accountability, right? I love the old T-Mobile, used the old T-Mobile commercial around phase five. Jim Rohn, the late Jim Rohn, master inspirational speaker, you know, he talked about the you are the average of the five people with whom you spend the most time. And it's this that same mantra applies to couples. Who are the couples that you hang around? Like if each of us kind of thinks and lists out the five couples that we spend the most time with, and then we look at kind of the bio of those couples, you know, and I don't mean that from a, oh, how many degrees do they have or how many, you know, how much money do they have? I don't mean that. You know, but what kind of spirit do they have? You know, what kind of aspirations and goals do they have? What type of marriage do they have? What kind of unity do they have? You know, what type of respect and value do they have for one another? And, you know, and when you see those kind of things, you're going to see all of these other some more material proxies of success as well. So each of us, I think, needs to look around and look at our five and look. You should have people in that. You should have couples around you who you are that you just scratch your head like, wow, they are amazing. Look at how amazing that couple is, right? You should all of us couples should be spending. We should have couples like that in our circle. Why? Because those couples are going to pull us up. Right. And all of us also should have couples that are, you know, that look at us that way. Right. We're doing something right. We're doing a lot of things right. And there are others that see us. Right. So all of us should have a Timothy and all of us should have a Barnabas. Right. And so that and I think the problem is so often what happens when you're a couple that you are what I'll call a high-functioning couple, then you end up spending a disproportionate amount of your time with couples who are struggling to be where you are, right? And so you end up giving and giving and giving to those couples emotionally, spiritually, you know, chronologically. You give and give and give to those couples. They suck you dry. I don't mean that pejoratively. But you never get, because you don't spend that time, because you're giving, because we're often, we're being generous, right? And we're like, okay, God brought these people in our lives, and so that means that he wants me to serve them and minister to them. And we get so many people like that in our circle that we don't have the time for the people that are going to invest in us, the people who are going to sow into us, the people who are going to lift us up, the people who we can look at and feel that sense of, you know, conviction or that sense of aspiration. And I think that's a huge problem in the in marriage, period, but certainly in the Christian community because of our desire to serve and give and our generous spirit.
You know, what you just said about these five couples, I think even though we're talking about marriage and finances, I think that's an important place to talk to the singles, those who are not yet married. Because a lot of times people get married, and when they get married, they start dealing with the finances. When I was working on my doc, when I first started my doctorate degree with New York Theological Seminary, my dissertation was going to be PRF in premarital counseling. The reason it was going to be that was because I was able to see that there was not enough of us who were getting ready to get married or who were young in their marriage, and the way that we were getting counseling, and this, and I can say just from my context and what people have told me, but the way we were getting counseling never really dealt with the marriage, the financial piece. But then I would look up and I would see finances as one of the top three or the top five reasons for divorce, depending on what statistics and research you're looking at. And I said, well, hold on. Okay, God, let me maybe do something. So when I started going to my pastoral colleagues, those who occupy those positions. What I started finding out, Dr. Arnold, was there was not a lot of engaged couples in the church. You had one person that was a member of the church, but the dude is somewhere else or at another church or vice versa. You know, the dude is there, but the lady was there. And I said, I'm not going to get a good test group, because if they're not coming to where you're at with their fiance,
right,
what makes me think that they're going to come and listen to the pastor say, hey, I invite you to sit down with Brother Dunlap and talk about some of these things. And so for our young people, for those who are contemplating marriage, I think we can encourage them that you need to be looking at who are these same people that are around you. Because, see, it's all good when we're just hanging out with folks, when
yeah.
we're just kicking it with somebody. But it takes something to be able to say, before we even make that step into marriage, to know what their credit report looks like, to know
yeah.
certain things like, do you believe in even having a will? Because when you come together in a marriage and you start accumulating things, better yet, just take certain states like the state of Alabama. Once you get married, it's now your spouse could get half. So it's not like you got to be in this relationship for a long period of time, because that's the rules of the state. That's the laws of the state. And when people don't know those things and they start going through certain challenges, it's all because they haven't dealt with anything, or because they haven't been informed or educated about certain things in advance of taking that leap into marriage. So my thing of encouragement to people is, yes, like you said, look at the spirit of the individual, how they think about money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good when recording, right? Or kicking
yeah.
it for some of the younger generations. It's good when we're doing that, when we're not really worrying about what's in the bank account. But when you have to see it and you have to combine it, some of the biggest challenges that I've had to face dealing with married couples is married couples having this mindset of mine and mine, or mine
mm-hmm.
and yours, not bringing everything to the table, which is antithetical to Genesis 1:27.
Mm-hmm.
If your finances and how you run your household is, I have my account, and I got to go to her and get money. If you got to do all of that, then that's just a recipe for disaster. And let me tell you where I find it at. I find it when somebody does something that is not pleasant when it comes to their finances, and then the other spouse finds out about it.
Right.
Those are the little I mentioned this last on Sunday. I said in John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus said the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And I said what he said is he comes. It didn't say the enemy does kill, steal, and destroy. So if we know that the enemy is coming, if we know the enemy is trying to attack our marriages, then we have to put up a good fight, which means for me, we have to start being more prepared than we are, so that not only we can strengthen our own marriages, but what about the other folks that's around us? Because
mm-hmm.
truth be told, we can look at those five couples around us, and sometimes it looks good. But Dr. Arnold, you know, like I know, a lot of times we don't have discernment. Sometimes we just don't have discernment.
I mean, that goes to the point of there is a lot of social pressure. You know, I'm a social psychologist, right? And so, you know, there's a lot of social pressure to appear a certain way as a Christian couple. And that's unfortunate, you know, that we've been socialized in our churches and even outside of our churches, but those of us who are Christian, we've been socialized to believe that we have to portray a certain thing and a certain image about how we are as a married couple. And that is problematic when there's dysfunction that is underneath that you, because of the image management initiative, you can't really explain or show weakness. You can't show the vulnerability. You can't show the mess up, you know. You have to cover it. And everybody everybody's covering. So you don't really know what you're getting. And that applies in the marriage context, and it applies too often in the single context that folks you're talking about as well. It's really hard to know what you're getting and what you're marrying into, because there's this social pressure to appear a certain way. And, you know, I think you're right that, you know, there's a way to, you can object, you can make that more objective by, you know, bringing it up pre-married, that you can request certain type of information to be as informed as possible. But the reality is, once you get to a certain point on the continuum of emotional investment, it's almost like, regardless of what you see, you are going to feel like, you're going to believe that it'll be okay, that it'll work out, because love conquers all. And, you know, it just depends where you are on that emotional continuum when that information is revealed to you. So what a lot of people do, they know that intuitively. They play that game. They get you emotionally connected before any revelations happen. And then, you know, it's hard to extricate yourself after that. And so it's unfortunate. I think that the challenge for us is to deconstruct this whole mythology, this whole myth around the image management and what it means to be a Christian. And, you know, I think if we can get underneath that and, you know, and say it's a myth, you know, and really be able to talk brass tacks, I think we're going to be on farther down the road to, you know, having better alignment between husbands and wives, you know, when they're engaged and then as they go into the marital relationship and for the longer term.
Something you said about being uncovered, and I remember something in your book. You mentioned about a naked marriage, and I took that as, look, When you are one with your spouse, you just have to let it all out. I remember when my wife and I, before we got married, and, you know, this thing about finances has been with me for a long time, and I remember constantly asking for the credit report. You know, we need to talk about our credit. We need to let, you know, I was willing to open up, but she wasn't willing to open up. And just like you said, well, you know, we got the wedding date, the reception hall set for this day, you know, the pastor's going to marry us on this day, you know, got my dad flying down from Philly and mom coming in. We're moving forward and all this other stuff, but ignoring the signs. And my wife, you know, this is just part of our testimony, again, and part of me being naked and open before the world. My wife's credit was so tore up, it was unbelievable. When I say she was sitting at around a 490 on a credit report.
Right.
Now, that's no condemnation, that's just a fact.
Right.
But the whole thing of the matter was, when two people come together, if I was so spiritually immature during that time, if I had certain high hopes that, okay, we're going to move because we both had houses. Okay, we're just going to sell both the houses and move somewhere else. Okay, with my income, we wouldn't have been able to do what I thought I was going to be able to do with my income and just my credit. But I sure as heck didn't want to put her credit to the test, because it would have just made things worse. And so we have to be willing, and that's encouragement for everybody. You just have to be willing to let those things out, because they're going to come out later on down the road. And praise be to God, her credit is better than mine, pushing 800. But
right.
We had to work through it. And what I tell people is, especially with what we do at PRF, is not an overnight thing. It's not a quick fix thing. And it's just like with marriages and what you do. We can't fix these things. These are things that have to go through a process. You know, when we talk about healing marriages, we talk about healing your finances. You have to be willing to go through the process. If you're willing to go through the process, then God will meet us where we are. But I think also conform to the world, because the world would say we can just go ahead and fix this. You know, the world has these things out here where you can get a divorce real quick. You don't have to go through the process. You don't have to go through mediation. You just go to the lawyer, I get your divorce in, let it be uncontested. because it's about this quick fix. And we have to be the ones to kind of deconstruct that as those of us that are practitioners in our own area to be able to know, slow down a little bit.
I think that's an important point. And I like one of the comments that has come in on Facebook. It said, you know, the couple has to be willing to open up truth to be truthful about their financial situation. And sometimes the person here, Brother Curtis, is saying that sometimes Christians are not willing to explore that part of their life. And that's exactly the point. And the reason they're not willing to explore it is because they don't feel that it's safe to do so. Right. So this goes back to basic psychology. Right. So one of the primary emotions that people want is acceptance. Right. That's a primary emotion. And they want rejection. And so when we're talking about acceptance, well, I don't want to show something that is going to create that separation, to create that the foster rejection, right? I want to be accepted. And so, well, I know this is not socially desirable. So this could cause me to not be accepted. So I hide it. I don't want to show it. And so what we have to do is to that's my point when I was saying deconstruct that myth, that we have to, we have to say, look, Christ came for the broken. And guess what? All of us are broken. Some people are farther down the road to healing than others are. But, you know, it goes to your point, Dr. Dunlap, about process, right? It's about a process. But we all know that we live in a culture that does not believe in or certainly does not merit the slow process, the systematic process. We live in more of an instant gratification type of culture. And so we have to really get people to, my wife and I are doing these marriage events, we often talk about incremental change. We try to get couples to understand if things aren't great today, they're probably not going to be great tomorrow. But is the measure of success with things being great tomorrow? Is the measure of success with things looking, you know, exactly like I want them next week? No, we can't use that as the barometer for success. So success is when we see things moving in the right direction. So is there a step? You know, break it down. Is there been any movement in a better direction today than it was yesterday? And if you see any of that movement, then you need to celebrate that, because what gets rewarded gets repeated. We understand that in basics and in the education system. You reward what you want to see repeated. You see some behavior that you want your spouse to repeat, reward it. No, that reward sometimes can just be a hug. It can be a pat on the back. It could be a kiss on the cheek. You know, it could be a nice night in the bedroom. It could be a lot of things, right? It could be a foot massage. It could be a bouquet of roses. But the point is, it just needs to be rewarded. And when it's rewarded, it will get repeated. Now, the problem is that too often we just be like, well, he should have done that anyway. She should have been doing that anyway. Why should I reward what you're supposed to be doing anyway? And you've been abusing me all of this time, and you think just because you did that, that everything's going to be better, that I'm going to be all happy, that you're going to get some tonight? Oh, no. You're right. And so what people are doing is they're not realizing that that's maintaining distance, and it's just pushing you farther and farther apart instead of bringing you together. So that's what we're trying to espouse, to, you know, get underneath this stuff, deconstruct it, and look for ways that you can make a step, just a step, towards one another.
Wow. What I'm hearing is we have to be willing to invest in our marriages.
Indeed.
We have to be willing to invest in our marriages. And when you think about, and that's why, again, this whole intersection of marriages and finance, you think about investment from a financial point of view. If I'm going to invest in a particular company, if I'm going to invest my money into my 401k or my thrift savings plan if I work for the government or in the military, then I'm expecting some growth.
That's right.
Now that's me. Now here's what I know. I led the Army Personal Financial Management course for several years. Every soldier that came in the Army had to go through the course. A lot of them chose not to invest. They didn't see the value in investing. They couldn't see the purpose of it and what it was going to benefit them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, I don't want to do that. And my clarion call is, we can't stand by just allowing folks just to keep saying, I'm not going to invest in my future. Because if you think about it, when these are young people, these are 20, 21-year-olds that are saying, I'm not going to invest in my future, then what does that say about how they're going to feel about marriage?
Right.
You won't invest in your future before you get that wife, that you have a lot of responsibility and a responsibility of stewardship for. If you won't do that for yourself, then as a father of three girls or young ladies and or two, I got a hard time not calling them my babies, but as a father of three, you know what I'm saying, Doc?
Oh yeah.
I have a hard time if one of them bring a young man to the house or I happen to talk to them and they don't seem like they're too concerned with their future, then I should be concerned as a father saying, well, I can't really see how you're going to be truly willing to invest in my daughter. And I believe that God can see it the same way. If you're not going to be willing to invest in me, in the things that I'm doing, in what I've already laid out in my word for you, the principles, the laws, the edicts, and all of those things, then you're not willing to do that with me. How can I trust you with that spouse and believe that you're going to do the same thing with the spouse?
Oh, indeed. I mean, so there was a study done years ago called the Marshmallow study, and you may be familiar with it, but it's pretty profound because essentially they started with some elementary school age kids, and they offered the kids, you could have one marshmallow now, or you could wait and have two later. And then this is a longitudinal study. They followed up 30 years later with the kids who were part of that study. And the correlation was scary. The kids who were the immediate, I'd rather just take the marshmallow now, significantly underperformed in, the success factors of life financially, job title, roles, responsibilities, things like that. The kids who delayed gratification, who waited for the second marshmallow later, they were performing 30 years later at a rate significantly above that of the kids who had selected immediate gratification. That's amazing, right? I mean, so you see the attitude, how entrenched that can be, right? 30 years, you see what you saw in elementary school. Now you're in your 30s, and the behavior is still the same. And that's why I started earlier and I said about mindset. We have to transform, and I think that's why Scripture so aptly talks about a renewing of the mind. This isn't just about behavior. This is about cognition as well, and when the cognition changes, when the mindset changes, the behavior comes along. But when the behavior is forced to change and the mindset does not change, then you get a retrenchment back to the previous behavior. So I think that very much ties into your point that you want to see if somebody's with my daughter as well, you want to see somebody that's got that longer-term future orientation. And I think you know, one of the things that also ties in here, and I like your metaphor for keeping it fine. Like if you were investing, right, let's say you had it in the mutual funds or the stock market or whatever, right, and so you have an investment and you're looking at your return, your statement monthly, and you notice that this month that your equities, your stocks, mutual funds, that you lost some money in this period. You're like, oh, okay, you know, the market goes up and down and, you know, it's a bad month. And then next month you get your statement again and you look at it and it lost more money. And you're like, crap, that's 2 months in a row. But, you know, the stock market goes up and down. And let's say that after 8, 9 months, every month, you are looking at your ROI on this account, and every month you're losing more and more money. What are you going to do, Dr. Dunlap? Are you going to just keep watching that statement every month go in the negative, or are you going to do something about it? Are you going to take the money out and try a different investment? So what I'm saying, when it comes to marriage, what too many couples are doing, they're looking at the crazy statement every month and seeing it going down and down and down, and they're not changing the strategy. They're continuing to do the same thing month after month, despite clear evidence that things are declining on every front in their marriage. And what I want to say is you got to do an investment change. Your strategy has to change, because otherwise you're going to keep getting the same return that you're getting. You got bad investments going on here. And until you change your strategy, you're going to keep losing. And you can't just take out your money and park it, because it's something called inflation that gets you then. What you got to do, in other words, you don't drift together. You drift apart, right? And so you have to be strategic and deliberate in making investments that are sound. You see, you're off 1 month. Guess what? Make a course correction and then test it again and see if things are better now. Look at it again next month and see what other course corrections. What kind of return? You want to maximize the return on your investment, right? Of course you do, right? With minimum risk, you want to maximize the return on your investment. And that's my message to couples. We are not maximizing the return on our investment because we're not investing in the right stuff.
You know, changes and corrections is what really leads to transformation. So it starts with the mind. And I want to read something that Pastor Bishop says on Facebook. He says, a lot of Christian couples won't attend a church financial teaching session because of fear of being looked down on. So the enemy uses this to keep them in financial bondage, which creates other areas of division in their spirituality and physical relationships. He couldn't have said it better. The last part of that, spiritual and physical relationships. What you're talking about, what I'm talking about, what we're dialoguing about together is about the spiritual and physical relationships. And we know God. We understand God a lot of times based upon the relationships that are around us. So when we're a baby, you know, we can't communicate it, but psychologists have said this, at least that I've read from people like Eric Erickson, talk about, you know, the stages of human life. Mm-hmm. And because when we are a baby, we don't know that that's mama that's feeding us. We don't know that that's daddy putting a bottle in our mouth. But what we know is, psychologically, and we can't communicate it, every time we start crying and we're hungry, that person comes to our rescue. That person invests something into us. And so we have to be the same way with God. We know that the relationships with us that we have around us when it comes to our marriages and our spouses, God is looking at how are we treating those things. And we can't be so heavenly minded to not deal with what's going on in the physical realm. So I appreciate Pastor Bishop's comments, and so we're looking for Pastor Bishop to bring PRF in or bring Dr. Arnold down to wherever he's located at so we could deal with some marriage and deal with some PRF related matters since he put that out there. So Pastor Bishop is a good friend of mine, and we appreciate him. We have a couple more minutes left, and I want us to deal with something that that you said. You talked about the on Facebook that negative portrayal of black men in a marriage commitment. And mm-hmm. so maybe for the next couple of minutes, because again, this is about Black Money Matters, and we know that we could talk about all the different type of statistics of black men in jail, which, you know, it's not like we are the number one people, but it's not just about being in jail. It's about having a record. It's not about the negative stereotypes. It's about those who are actually working and trying to do the best that they the very best that they can. Depending on how men have grown up in the family unit determines a lot of times how they approach this marriage commitment piece. I know that was a big issue for me. So what is it that we can say for just a few moments to the black male? And I think it's relative to this whole discussion because we should be leaders in our family as black men.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. What can we say? Where can we take the conversation from that point of view?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, obviously sociologically, and you've touched on a lot of the dynamics. You know, there are a lot of pressures that the black male has faced, continues to face. You know, there's been systematic efforts in this country to strip and emasculate us, and you know that, and many of our government programs, even those that are quote unquote well intended, have had disastrous consequences on the family, black family, and pushing apart the family unit rather than bringing it together. And so, you know, I think one of the things that I wanted to communicate in that just brief Facebook post was, you know, there's this negative portrayal so often of us in the media, and you look, some of it is, you know, reflecting the reality of some of the negative behavior, maladaptive behaviors that some do. But I think there's not enough that is reflective of the amazing things that many, that more do. You know, I believe that there are far more of us black men who are out here doing amazing things with our children and investments in our children. There's amazing men who are doing, black men who are doing amazing jobs as husbands and with our wives. And I'm not saying perfect jobs, but, you know, right, putting in our effort, you know, and working hard and to provide for families. And, you know, I just wanted to affirm that, you know, we just don't fall for the myth, don't fall for the stereotype, you know, to push back on it some. And because I think when you keep, you know, when you keep purporting or pushing forward a certain negative image, certain negative portrayal, that can have a negative impact on the psyche, and you can have people who just give in, you know, give in to it. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's again, you know, I keep going back to kind of the education context, but there's plenty of data with children to show how they live up to the expectations that you have of them. So, you know, and I think the same thing holds true for us as adults. We're just big kids in many ways. And I think that when there are low expectations of us as black men, I think many black men are living up to those low expectations. And part of what I want to say is we should have higher expectations because, you know, why can't we surround ourselves? Why can't I surround myself with the Dr. Dunlaps of the world? You know, it's that same Faith 5 principle that Brother Jim Rohn was talking about, it applies in this context too, right? If I'm around other brothers who are doing positive things, who are making a difference in the world, what do you think the impact of that is going to be on me? So I'm going to do more positive things, right? And so it has a cascading effect. And so, you know, I think that we have to keep using these spaces to market and promote the thing, the positive things that are going on in amongst black males. So that was really, that's the really the spirit of which I wanted to, you know, I posted that. I just think it needs to be more of that.
And in our last few moments, here's one scripture that I really want to leave everybody with. It comes out of Proverbs chapter 13, verse 22. Those of y'all who have been on the PRF table know this is one of the scriptures that we use when we teach our planting and savings, our first cousins. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And so taking what you just said, Dr. Arnold, it's up to us, and all of you who are listening, all of you who are pastors and leaders in your community, and I'm not talking about people just that has a title or a position. I'm talking to those who have a leadership spirit, those who are doing leadership tasks. We have to be the ones that tell other men that you're a good man. Before you can leave an inheritance to your children's children, you got to grasp the concept that you're a good man. So if your psyche is that you're not a good man because somebody else then told you that you're not a good man, society has said that you're not a good man, how will you ever get to that point of leaving an inheritance? Are you wrapping your head around this whole piece and narrative or this biblical principle of inheritance? And this is one of the things that is really going to strengthen the black family. I go back to the part of what I said at the opening of the show. The future, your future, depends on how we understand, educate, and transform. So we have to transform our mindset. We have to help others to transform their mindsets. And then we can really deal with what does faith, finances, and family look like, especially that with marriage. So with that, Dr. Arnold, please, before you go, before we get off the air tonight, please tell everybody where they can get this amazing book. And I'll share this with the audience that's listening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dunlap. It's been an amazing conversation. Well, certainly you can read more about the book at unfairmarriage.com. You can see more about me talking about this and many other topics at haroldarnold.com. The Leading You Home podcast, I talk about that a lot. If you're a podcast listener, tune in. And, it's so important, that word. I love that word inheritance that you just used. And this is not just financial, right? This is this attitude and this belief, our faith, a deeper, that more robust faith that I talk about in The Unfair Advantage. And that measure of grace, those are also things that we pass along to our children and our children and our children's children. So I just, pray God's blessings upon all of the listeners here, the PRF audience. You're growing in listening and participating in this community, and I certainly applaud that. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Minister Sanders, she's one of the other hosts of the show. I'm going to ask her to make sure that she posts the websites and the information about the podcast on the PRF table, so we'll just make that as a separate post on our Facebook page, particularly so that people can follow along, because everything that we do here on the PRF table is not about a one-time and done. We're about relationships. We're about strengthening each other and supporting each other, because that's the only way that we're going to make it. And so we hope that everybody who has been listening has definitely been blessed by what's been said. And we ask everybody, continue to follow us on Facebook. There's been a lot of conversation, Dr. Arnold. You got a lot of people stirred up tonight.
So I want to continue that conversation.
Somebody, Minister Sanders, she said everybody is texting her. I'm like, tell them to put it on the Facebook page so other folks can hear. Because, people sometimes like to stay in the shell, but we have to communicate, because oftentimes what one person is thinking, four more are also thinking the same thing. And so that's how we learn. That's how we grow, by sharing with one another. So with that, God bless you, everyone. Again, Dr. Arnold, God bless you. We look forward to working and serving with you in the near future on whatever God has for us to do. And ladies and gentlemen, please, I'm hoping that when I talk to Dr. Arnold in about a week, that he tells me that the numbers of people who have purchased the Unfair Advantage have spiked so much thanks to the PRF table. So we want that to happen. And I'll say this, we are about to launch on our website all of the various books from the people who we find so gracious to come and share with us on the show. So we are going to be looking to put that as a book that they can get through our website. Sometimes this they may not go directly to your website, but if we can connect from our website to your website where they can purchase the book, then that's the end result, because we want them to get these things into their hands so that God can work through them. I will say this. When I started reading your book, Dr. Arnold, I think, when did I get this book? We got this about December when I was up there, and we coordinated. That was the beginning of December. Can I tell you that the enemy started attacking for like 2 weeks after I just started getting into your book? But I encourage everybody, it's all a part of the process. It's nothing wrong with being in the wilderness, because that's the place where you praise and worship God, in the wilderness. And I can tell you what I had to do when I started seeing these attacks coming. They weren't, some of them weren't pleasant, but I had to press in. And I can just tell you, you know, I still have not been able to complete the book, because there's some parts of this book that I've had to read over and over and over again to make sure that I got certain things in my spirit, even before we coordinated this show tonight. So again, brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, it is well worth it. It will do some amazing things for your marriage. And just like with PRF, I'm confident also with the Unfair Advantage, it's not just about marriages. If you can get the principles that God is trying to get through these different mediums, through these different different radio shows and acts and everything else that God is trying to do that come outside of just particularly just the Bible, I promise you he will do some exceedingly abundant things in your life. Join us next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on the PR table, where we have Elder Tyrone Holcomb. He's written a book called, several books, but the series is called Marriage Matters. He will be our guest next week out of Coppers Cove, Texas, and we are excited about him. So with that, God bless you, everyone. We will see you next week on the PRF table. We love you.